How are you?
I'm all right. I'm just setting up shop here. How's that? A little change. There we go.
That's nice. I'd like to have half that wall. I'll trade you my vinyl toys for your guitars. What do you think?
Why are your toys worth much?
Yeah, some of them are worth a bit of money. Yeah, some of them are worth a bit of money. Every guitarist that I've known, including the one that was in my band, they're just obsessed, and there's no, it's never enough.
And I think some guys get this with cars, right? Like at a certain age, when you start to that thrill that you're getting when you possess it and you haven't you've been dreaming about it for a long time,
Yeah.
and then you get it. Well, then now it's not just a question of the guitar; it's also a question of that feeling. It's like you want that feeling again. It's like you're addicted. Yeah. Oh well. What can I tell you? There's worse things you could be addicted to in life, I guess.
Oh yes, I know that firsthand.
Oh,
I've been sober a long time, so I get that. My addictions that have transferred, and it's funny because a lot of collectors have an addictive personality. So I think when you can go towards the healthier addictions, the ones at least you can resell, it's a lot better than going like, oh yeah, like I put all that up my nose, like I can't get that back.
yes. Oh
It's it.
no. And believe me, I saw enough of that firsthand where I go,
Well,
yeah, that
that.
just doesn't make any sense to me. That's not me. But I have this a little bit of Scottish Presbyterian in my blood, I think, which is like, I'm no wasting no money on that sort of thing. That's just foolishness.
It's funny because like I mentioned, I've been sober a long time. One of my first AA sponsors was Scottish,
Oh, yeah.
and I'm half Jewish. And he remember he would look at me and go, "Son, let me tell you, the Scots make the Jews look generous."
All
he's Scotty. Yeah, he was a hilarious guy. Anyways, let's jump into
right.
this. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Rockman Power Hour, a podcast where we talk to awesome people every week. And I'm just happy to say right out of the gate that my co-host Ryan Stick is back. Ryan, I don't want to go into too much detail because I know you've been through a rough week, but I just wanted to
Oh,
ask you.
I'll go into detail
No, no, no.
because it's funny.
I don't want to go into too much detail. But I'm really, really glad to say that you made bail because we
yeah.
were all getting worried about you. And if you notice that there's stuff in my room that's missing, I had to sell a lot of shit that I had to post bail for you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sorry about that. It's just, these hands, they're very sticky, and you should see the stuff that I stole from you too. Okay, let's stop this. Yeah, I had surgery.
And you're turning 40.
yeah.
Is it tomorrow your birthday?
Of the day of this publishing, yeah, tomorrow, April 18th, which is the same date as Conan O'Brien, which is weird because I've loved Conan O'Brien my whole life and only really made the connection that we had the same birthday like 6 months ago. So I guess I wasn't that good of a fan, right? I was like,
So you share a birthday with Conan.
yeah, no, share Roberto, my hero. It's a great thing. And I'm up and about now. It's for the last few episodes I've been behind the scenes, and I'm getting my hair did on Thursday, well, tomorrow actually. So I'm not exactly fully he's all vatted yet,
Right,
but
right. But you're getting
I
there. You're,
plan to
yeah.
be. But Jason, I want to know something. What is the story? Every now and then someone gives you a great gift where they think of you and you feel seen, and so
Yeah.
it matters to your soul. Can you tell me the story of this?
Okay, so that was okay. So, do you know how you got how that came into your possession?
No, I know Karen, of course, and she's amazing and wonderful. And she also, for what it's worth, found my brother-in-law one of those Slimer Ghostbuster buckets, which is worth $80 now that
Yeah.
they're all sold out.
Popcorn ones, yeah. It's
Yeah, yeah.
same thing with the Dune ones. Like now, it's become the popcorn, the custom popcorn bucket is the thing that everybody's looking for when they go to the theater, which is great because it's getting asses into seats.
Yeah.
But okay, so I don't have anything really to do with that besides the fact that she reached out to me and she said, "Hey, I've got a birthday present for Ryan. I want to give this to him. Do you think he'll like it? Sends me a picture. I'm like, are you kidding me? He's going to love that. And then I get an email from Mel.
Yeah.
And she's like, or a message from Mel, text message. And Mel's like, hey, Ryan loved the gift. That's so thoughtful. And I'm like, I had nothing to do with it. Like,
God, that's so funny. Cause Karen was going on about, oh yeah, me and Jason both wanted to get like, that's just, you know, shout out to her right now. She's just such a really caring person to even like, and to say you were involved and you're just kind of like, I was
just asked my opinion. I was like, what do you think of this? And I was like,
the box.
I was like, he's going to love this. I mean, if someone gave me, you know, that would be, it's so cool.
It is the coolest, one of the coolest gifts of my life.
And, yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you one thing. When I saw that, I realized that whatever our birthday gift for me and Julia is going to be is going to have to top that. And it's we're scrambling right now because there's not much. I mean, I'm looking around and thinking what I can give you, but
You pawned everything because I was in prison.
Well, that's it. I gave you the gift of freedom. Okay.
Yeah.
Enough. But dude, seriously, when that was brought to my attention, I was like, I thought that was such a thoughtful thing to do for you. So yeah, shout out to her for giving you such a rad gift. Super cool.
If anyone wants to hear funny surgery stories, I think I'll say them at the end of the episode, long after the triumph part. So whoever clicks on this doesn't have to, you know, kind of get bummed out or something, even though it's not really bummed out part, but you know, if you're curious and you want to stick around to the end, I'll say some funny stuff because I've been meaning to tell you these stories and I figure we might as well do it when we're recording.
Yeah, let's save it to the end because usually by then most people have tapered off when you look at the analytics, so we can say whatever we want.
Oh yeah, totally.
Okay, so we got a couple of things to get to. We have to say, first off, thank you to our friends over at Heartbeat Hot Sauce. They truly help us keep the lights on here. Now, Ryan, I've been talking about this forever the last few weeks because I got 6 bottles of this, and I have one for you that I'm going to bring you when I see you. I won't bring it tonight, and we're going to talk about what we're doing tonight, by the time people see this, we'll have been in the past. But Heartbeat Hot Sauce are the heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. And they've got a brand new sauce called Salsa Verde. And it is done with the chef Laurent Dagenet from Quebec, who I've been trying to get on the podcast. It hasn't really been successful, but we're going to still try our darndest to get him in. And really, really rad hot sauce. What I love about this, it falls between mild and medium. So it's like a go-to everyday sauce. And one of the biggest comments that I get from hot sauce fans is I like hot sauce, but I don't want something that's going to kill me because it's not enjoyable. I want something that's going to add to whatever I'm eating. And kind of like the blueberry habanero, kind of like the pineapple habanero, and the dill pickle serrano, those are really good everyday sauces that you can have on anything. And this falls right in line with that. So if you haven't tried this latest hot sauce from Heartbeat, it's called the Salsa Verde. It is phenomenal. And if you use our promo code ROCKMAN20 right below there, that'll get you 20, not bro, here. Uh-huh. That'll get you 20% off your entire order. And you can use that code over and over and over and over again. So thank you to them. Thank you to our friends at Studio House Designs. I am rocking the very, very cool Blair Witch Project.
Ooh, nice.
It falls at a perfect time because all the rage again are found footage films. And like Late Night with the Devil, I saw that about a couple of weeks ago. It blew my mind. It kind of falls in that.
Rocking out Dave DeSmalchin.
Yeah.
I love that actor. I've been praising his name since I saw him in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
So cool that he's really getting his time in the sun.
Yeah, and he deserves it. And another one that our friend Bill from Bill Keller was telling us, he was telling me about this movie called Dagger, D-A-G-R, that is supposedly incredible. It's another found footage. So so thanks to Studio House Designs. And Ryan, you were rocking a very, very cool Doyle shirt. I like that a lot.
Yeah, Doyle Wolfgang from Frankenstein of the Misfits. He's on tour right now, actually. Nobody plays a show like Doyle, even when he's playing in the Misfits. But his solo band, I got to say, I really, 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 under all the projects of people, besides Danzig, of course, because I love Danzig 1, 2, and 3, but of all the Misfit members that have had projects afterwards, like Doyle 2 is just such a fucking solid album. And I listen to it all the time. I'm like, oh, I'll listen to a track. And then the entire thing goes by and it's got that fucking thick, cool guitar tone that I fell in love with when I was a teenager, when American Psycho came out. And, also, his singer, Alex Wolfman's story, is such an underrated talent when it comes to the punk horror scene. And the guy is a fucking maniac and live. He does crazy shit, hangs from the ceiling. and they've never been to Canada, and I've never actually gotten to see all this in person, but the videos terrify me. Like, I'm watching Blair Witch for the first time.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. Well, very, very cool. And thank you to our friends at Audio Technica Canada for hooking us up with these great mics, headphones. I've been so, so happy using this stuff. Just having a mic arm, like, so I can actually move my hands like this, and just the sound and everything. And they have these this little mixer that I'm using too. So I just thank you to them for just helping us sound great. We're going to be going out on the field soon too. So doing some handheld stuff. We're going to be using their handheld mic. So if you ever see either one of us using a microphone anywhere, it'll be an Audio Technica. I can tell you that for sure. So thank you to Mike Marino for helping us out with that. Ryan, before we get to this week's guest, and this week's guest is a legend. If you're a fan of Triumph and this record, if you grew up in Canada, and you like rock and roll, there's no way that you did not hear this record on the radio station in whatever city that you lived in. And if you're a fan of classic rock, this is like, you know, classic. Tried and true, bulletproof rock and roll. And we have Rick Emmett on the show this week, which is super cool. But before we do that, you and I, okay, because we are pre-taping this, so some right. people, we have to break the fourth wall a little bit, but we are going to see WWE tonight. I've always kind of liked wrestling from afar, but I've never been a hardcore fan. But seeing wrestling live with my daughter at Place Belle for the first time really, really got me into wrestling. And then you and I, the experience we had at WWE SmackDown, was it SmackDown or Raw? It was Raw, I think, right?
I believe it was Raw. I believe so. Yeah.
So you and I were lucky enough to go to WWE, and we had incredible, incredible seats. Yeah. You and I were sitting front row.
It was nuts. I've never seen the wrestlers that close before, unless it's like a house show in Laval. Yeah. And it was something else. And it was, you know, like in our line of work, we don't always know what's going to happen months and months and months in advance. Sometimes it's by a week by week basis. And if you see, oh, Rockman Ryan went on this adventure, they're like, yep, news to us. We didn't know. Sometimes you get a call, and especially that day, you're like, this is happening. Can you get to the Bell Center in 2 hours? And it, you know, which 2 hours sounds like a lot of time, but in the grand scheme of things, when this is your entire life, no, 2 hours is not very long, because who knows what you could have been doing, especially when you're almost 40. So, yeah.
Right. So the fact that you and I got to sit where we sat and got to see what we saw was incredible. And we're going back to the WWE tonight.
Yep.
And in the, in celebration of that, I remembered probably 12 years ago when I first started working at Shome, I got approached by a local wrestling company here in Montreal. And they asked me, would you be down to wrestle? And I was like, me wrestle? They're like, yeah, we want you to come and we'll run you through it and everything. And I'm like, all right. So my only request was like, if I do it, can I do a Stone Cold Stunner? And they were like, absolutely. Are you up to the task? Do you feel athletic enough? And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to give it a shot. So I pulled this up from the interwebs, and I wanted to know if you wanted to see it for the first time, because I don't think you've ever seen me wrestle. So no. this is about the time where I'm about to throw the chair onto this guy. And then, you'll see what happens after this, but you tell me in your humble opinion, how good this Stone Cold Stunner is.
Okay. Let's see this. Oh my God. You're wearing white. Wow, you went high. You went high, dude.
Watch this. Shout out to the NCW.
How many years ago is this?
12.
Yeah, this could have been 12 days ago. Like, you're more consistent with your look than Homer Simpson is.
But isn't that rad?
Yeah, super rad.
I've never wrestled before. I've never wrestled since. But it was so much fun. And okay, so it looked really cool, right?
Yeah, but it's funny because you almost did it like someone was, like, you were high up. Usually a Stone Cold Stunner, it's like, here we go, and then follow me down. It's like you, it's almost like you climbed up some invisible stairs.
Well, it's because I grabbed him and then I did the thing, but I didn't realize part of the move was he lifts me up. So I got so high and I was like, and I showed this to a few people like, man, you got big air on that stunner. He could have broken his neck. I'm like, no, I was literally being carried by that man. Yeah. And it expertly faked, but
he picked you up in his strong hands and just, you know, swept you away.
Oh yeah. It was anyway. So I wanted to show that to you because I know we're both going to see wrestling and I know how excited you get when we go to the WWE. And yeah, so that's my only brush I have with wrestling. I know you have way more probably wrestling stories than I do, but
it's mainly by watching it and just trying not to embarrass myself while talking to the talent. But yeah.
Well, I'm glad if you ever get a chance to get in the ring, do it. Okay. Cause it's fun. It's really, really fun. And, yeah, that was something I completely had forgotten about. And I was sitting here today going, shit, I wrestled. I got to show this to Ryan. And it's one of those things where you'll be like, I'll tell you a story and you'll be like, you never told me that.
That's true. Well, you bring up a lot of random stuff. It's like, oh yeah, we did a Poison cover and Bret Michaels produced it. And it's like, what?
Well, we'll save that for when we get Bret on the show. Cause we will eventually have him on the show, but all right. Yeah. Ryan, our guest this week, none other than Rick Emmett. Rick Emmett is a rock and roll legend. I don't even want to say a Canadian rock legend because it doesn't matter. He's just a rock and roll legend. Badass guitar player, great singer, an integral part of the power trio known as Triumph. And one of my prized possessions in my collection, you know I've got a lot, and I know you got a lot, was this. When this was given to me, and this is their Classics that was repressed on vinyl. And it's signed by all three members of Triumph. And this was sent to me from my friend Chip. And I absolutely love this. Like, this is one of those things that you got to leave in the will. And I love Triumph. I love this band. When they re-released Allied Forces, I got super excited. And when he was available to chat, I was like, are you kidding me? I want to talk to Rick Emmett. The guy is just, he's a guitar and a music genius. So we have him on the podcast this week. I'm very excited about it. And without any further ado, let's jump into it right now. Our chat with Rick Emmett. Really, really happy we had a chance to talk today. I've been a lifelong fan of Triumph. I come by it honestly. I was a radio DJ in Montreal at Shome for almost 14 years. So wow. It's kind of in my blood. You know, if you grow up in Canada, if you listen to a rock station, and if you eventually work for a rock station, Triumph is ingrained in you. And I also was in a band for a while, and we shared the same publicist because Chip was my publicist. So when you guys put Classics out, he had this sent to me.
Oh, nice.
And I remember when I got this, I was like, I called him right away. I go, Chip, you're the best. And I ended up getting to talk to Mr. Levine at one point when the documentary came out. So I'm glad I'm finally able to talk to you because it's been a very, you know, for a band that was fairly inactive for quite some time, the last four or five years for Triumph has been really busy. And for you. So,
yeah, I think part of it is, you know, Gil really sort of dedicated himself to the idea of generating a legacy for the band.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I went, okay, well, but I kind of left the band. The band's not really mine. You know, it's his.
Yeah.
So I go, okay, well, then I guess I have my own work to do in terms of, you know, setting the record straight, creating a record in the first place, you know, all of that stuff. Plus, I've always been a kind of a prolific guy.
Yeah.
So I think that the fact that there was this wave of sort of Triumph, busy people being interested in it, all of these kinds of things starting to happen again, it made it so that people went, oh, there's a lot of Rick stuff going on, and there always had been.
Yeah.
It wasn't as high profile. It was sort of, I was under the radar for a long, long time. And, your pal Chip, he's probably got a lot to do with the fact that, I mean, his job is to sort of raise the profile. I thought it was pretty interesting on the Oscars where one of the actresses, she thanked her publicist. You're not supposed to thank your publicists. They instruct them.
Yeah.
Don't go off on these tangents where you're thanking your publicists. And one of them goes, I don't care. I'm going to do it. And the truth is publicists, they perform a valuable function, you know, make it so that the world notices what you're doing. Otherwise you might be, you know, toiling away in obscurity as it were.
It's funny because, you know, we talk about publicists and I, you know, a lot of bands will come to me because of my experience in radio, and because, you know, a lot of the times I was the point of entry for them to get their first, you know, their first exposure on air and stuff. And they'd always go, what's the formula? What do you need? And I would always tell, you know, especially nowadays, I would tell them, nowadays, what you need more than anything, you don't even need a label anymore, because we know you guys can record all this stuff at home on your phones and on your computers. You know, with plugins, you can make it sound like you're recording it, you know, at a world-renowned studio. What you need now on your team is you need a publicist and you need a booking agent. And if you can cut them in equally for a share of the pie, you're good.
Yeah, well, maybe you're good.
But I'm saying it's
yes.
The business model has changed a little bit. So publicists.
Oh, a little bit? Yeah. It changed. And the thing is, man, it keeps changing at the speed of light through the fiber optic cable. It's a digital universe now. And so it becomes a question of, to me, I wouldn't say, when we say publicist, that sort of it has a connotation of an old world kind of job. Right. And really the world now is more about, well, who understands how social media works? How do you create memes? How do you make it so that you're, constantly feeding this voracious appetite of the digital universe for things that are like, my wife will show me a little thing on Instagram or, and I'll be howling, laughing at this thing. I don't know these people, but my God, what they're sharing of their lives. You go, man, you're brave people,
Yeah.
So there's that too. There's an element of kind of ambition and courage and all of those kinds of things that are, and I used to tell that to college music students, it's a kind of a character attitude thing that becomes even maybe more important than your musical talent, but then also there's this thing of, I think just having a kind of a strength of character that you're going to decide, well, this is who I am today. And I'm willing to share that, whereas I think some folks kind of go, well, I'm not keen on necessarily sharing too much, yeah. And it can bite your ass, that whole world can come back and, make you regret that you maybe said the wrong thing in the wrong way or wore the wrong designer outfit at the wrong time, like whatever, I don't know. John Simmons maybe got it figured out. Just show up naked.
Yeah, that was good. It's funny though, because everything is cyclical, and you see it. There's always, it seems like if something's released every 20 or 25 years, there seems to be a resurgence. And that seems to be the pattern, 2025. Where there's a wave of interest again, then it goes away and you see it. And, just to go back to the Triumph thing, it was really nice to see that, because it did get a lot of eyeballs on all of you guys and on everything that you guys do. And especially you, because, you were someone who always was putting music out. Like, you were always doing stuff. You weren't resting on your laurels. You were doing stuff. So I think it's a really nice segue to, you releasing the biography, this collection coming out, and people going, oh man, this guy's like, was really, influential to a lot of people. Cause when I talk to guitar players, they'll say, oh man, like Rick Emmett, come on. Like he's on the Mount Rushmore, definitely of Canadian guitar players, but in guitar players in general, like you're up there. And a lot of people, I find that your name unfortunately wouldn't be in the conversation enough, but I always knew that being a musician, cause I'm like, man, Rick can play. But it's really, really cool to see this interest again in you and, the biography, this Diamonds collection coming out. So tell me a bit about that. Did the doc give you a bit of a fire in your belly to go, I want to capitalize a little bit on this exposure?
It wasn't so much a question of capitalizing, because, I'm even back in the Triumph days, I wasn't really as much into it for the money as maybe, the other guys were, or the career success,
Right.
My partners were pretty ambitious guys.
Yeah.
And they liked the business and they had a taste for it. And I was always sort of more of, well, I'm searching around over this way now. I'm going off on an artistic tangent this way. And that can make it so, there was once an article in a guitar magazine and they said, well, he's too talented for his own damn good. Yeah. I used that in my bio because I went, that's accurate. And which is not to say that I'm bragging about having talent, because, talent is, There's plenty of it. It's around. It's easy to find people that are talented. You know, you can find 5-year-old kids playing violin on TikTok, and you go, holy, look where that talent is, unbelievable. But in the end, it's sort of, what are you going to do with it? You know, and you know, when you grow up and you become an adult, you know, I often ask myself, what do I want to be when I grow up? You know, and at 70 years of age,
yeah,
I think that's one of the things that's working against you. You know, that like I think I had a talent for kind of going off on tangents.
Yeah.
And I think it probably drove Mike and Gil in the band crazy sometimes. It was like, oh, Rick, that's not a song for a rock band. You know, that's especially a rock band Triumph that blows off a lot of stuff, you know, like.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I've gone off on a bit of a tangent here now in the thing. When the doc came out, I felt like I had an obligation to sort of set the record straight about my story. That's a story of Triumph, but it's not necessarily my story. And my story was going to be one of, well, you know, why did I become the kid that I was, and where did I come from? What was my family like? And all of like, family's more important to me than this, you know, which is, you can see how important this is to me. Like, but so that was going to be part of the story that I wanted to tell. And then just the whole thing of like values, and we touched on this a little earlier. Like I used to tell college students, look, try to offer folks something that money can't buy, because it's not just a commercial kind of a transaction here. You know, if you do that, chances are it's not really going to last very long.
Right.
You can certainly create, you know, some sort of bubblegummy kind of experience, but that doesn't really last, you know. And there are artists that have an ability to create, you know, extraordinary kinds of bubblegummy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and I would say, you know, David Bowie is one, and Madonna. And but they also had this ability to go, yeah, but I'm going to put stuff in there that's going to make it so that it's going to last. It's going to have an integrity. And I would say, you have to look to artists like that to understand they're playing both sides of the game. Some guys don't, you know. But I mean, even an artist like, say, Springsteen is a guy that is saying, I've got a shtick. This is my thing. And I'm not going to wander too far away from, you know, what puts the bread on my table.
Right.
But he also goes, well, I'm also going to put my heart and soul on the table. And that's why people are going to love me and come to my shows. And you know, I'm going to have a following that is so deep and strong because I, you know, and I would say, you strip yourself naked, get out on the high wire, no safety net, you know, take that risk, because that's what art sort of has to do, you know. So I felt an obligation to do that, write the book. You know, I was writing poetry. I was still writing songs. I've got a thing that I've just been working on. And I say this because it points out something about, you know, here I am talking to you. We're doing this interview and we're talking about the Diamonds thing. But I've already got another album I finished and it's in the can, and I've written a book about it, and I want that out because I wanted it out yesterday because I finished it, you know.
Yeah.
So, but there's a time lag that exists where, well, no, but hang on, you got to get all the ducks in order, and then, you know, some publicists discuss, set up the things, and then I got to talk to people, and then somebody somewhere is going, a Diamonds collection? What is that?
I know.
And I'm going, right. Okay. So, and I'll tell you that story quickly. So I got the masters back for the three albums that I made after I left Triumph.
Right.
I did three albums where I was kind of sort of chasing the mainstream, still thinking I was in the business. The first album, absolutely. We'd made a deal with Charisma Records in the States. They sent it out to FM radio. It got tremendous ads. It was doing great. And the label went bankrupt.
Yes.
And it was like the album just whoosh, it's gone, you know. Then the world was changing rapidly. And we talked about this earlier, but the whole advent of, you know, Seattle, Soundgarden, Nirvana, Stone Temple Pilots, you know, that was starting to happen at radio.
Yeah.
And so what do they want with a 40-year-old guy that used to sing an arena band in the 80s? They go, oh, no, that's, we don't want to be associated with that. You know, we want to be hip, you know? So I was no longer hip, and I could see that, you know, and I was like, okay. So I started slowly but surely becoming a little more artistic, the three albums. One was pretty much chasing the mainstream, the guy that used to be in Triumph. I'm on the cover with a Les Paul and a black leather jacket. The next one was more like, okay, well, Rick, maybe who you are is working against you. So you should maybe be incognito and just put out this record. It was a very schizo record. It was called Ipso Facto.
Yeah.
But it had a lot of good stuff on it. It was very guitar oriented. I think that was the one where the guy went, Emmett's too talented for his own good, right around that period.
Yeah.
And then I did an album called Spiral Notebook where I went, okay, forget this. I'm just going to write a bunch of singer-songwriter kinds of tunes, which is the other part of me, right? Like, I'm a singer and I'm a songwriter. I'm not just a guitar player, you know? So those were the three albums. And then I got the masters back and I went, okay, well, I'll let this guy, Greg Campbell from Music in Motion, Merch in Motion, rockpapermerch.com, which is where if you want it, you can go and find it, rockpapermerch.com. That was kind of the impetus for that. And it was kind of fun to dig around and find old pictures. And he wanted to put this deluxe thing together. You know, there's good colored vinyl and there's, oh my God, you know, pictures. And he goes, can you write out the lyrics? I go, okay, well, I'll pick one song from each of the three albums and I'll handwrite the lyrics. Yes. And I sent them to him, to Courier. And then about, you know, 3 months go by and 4 months go by and he sends me a thing. He goes, I've lost those. I can't find them. You're going to have to do it again. I said, oh no, not doing it again, buddy. Like, you better send out the search party and try and find that stuff. I'd sent him on my phone. I'd sent him like the photos of the sheets. And I said, you'll have to use those. Like, I'm not doing it again. It was a lot of work. It was hard to write all that stuff and not make mistakes.
Of course.
Anyhow, he found them and they're in there. So
it's great to hear people that have had a bit of time away from something that can reflect and look back and say, I was going through this or I was reacting to this. But I imagine there's a certain amount of like, hey, you know, that's just who I was at the time. And I think when you're an artist and you can own that and say, you know, say it the way you said it, like, this is the best I could do at that time. And I think any artist is exactly doing that. They're just doing the best they can at that moment. And, you know, with all the pressure, especially now with, you know, everyone having a voice, everyone being able to broadcast, everyone being able to give their opinion instantly, it's really tough to be a new artist. And to have just the courage to, you know, anyone that hasn't done this before doesn't know the courage just to step on stage and to, you know, to share something that you've written with someone else is terrifying, you know, and then not only putting it out there for people to judge. So I imagine during that period, you know, now you can look at it and say, you know, from the viewpoint or vantage point of a 70-year-old man who, let's face it, you don't really care anymore. Like, that was you're comfortable in your skin. But I imagine when you were going through that and realizing some of those things like, oh yeah, I'm not grunge, or, oh yeah, this, you know, I'm doing this record that's kind of like incognito and it might not necessarily have pushed through. Was it hard on you, or did you always kind of have that attitude? I'll just move on to the next thing.
I think it's a combination of the two. It is hard on you, but you accept that as, this is the way, this is par for the course. This is how it works. You know, there's a price you pay for everything. And I mean, one of the points that I made in the memoir is that, you know, family was this priority for me. A lot of what I was doing in order to try and earn paychecks was to bring it home and, you know, provide for the family, a lifestyle that they'd grown accustomed to, you know. And that whole process, it's costing me something because I would rather be with the family, but no, it's a Thursday night and I'm in Cincinnati, you know, like that kind of thing. Every artist is going to have to pay something. You know, there's been a nice little thing that's gone on lately about Joni Mitchell, you know, and she resurfaced at Newport and then resurfaced again at the Grammys.
Yeah.
And she sings that song Both Sides Now. And it's like just mind blowing how it's so interesting for an 80-year-old woman to be singing that song that she wrote as a 23-year-old, you know, and it has this, it'll always have this kind of quality that exists in it. So, you know, the price she paid, I think Leonard Cohen once said something along the lines of, you know, well, she sacrificed love so she could pursue her art, you know, and everybody pays that kind of price a little bit, you know. Sometimes I would rather be sitting and watching a hockey game on TV, but well, I got to be working on my chops, you know. And then you can't really do two things at once. I can't be writing a song and watching a ball game, like, you know, I'm not very good at splitting my my attention. So anyhow, what you said, that was well said. It was a really good thing about the courage to sort of be taking it on. And when people talk about talent, you know, we sort of superficially think about, oh, the ability to write a song or the ability to play an instrument or the ability to sing or whatever. But the talent sometimes is, no, you got a talent for getting in front of people and then finding this thing, which is, and there's a really famous old story of Dustin Hoffman had been working with Laurence Olivier in a movie, and he was a method actor. And Hoffman had decided to stay up all night because he was going to get his teeth drilled.
Oh, Marathon Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have
and
it.
So, yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah. So, and they show up on the set, and Olivier looks at him and he goes, man, you look horrible. And he goes, well, you know, I'm in the zone, man. This is my method. This is what I'm doing. And Olivier goes, well, have you ever tried acting? And so then later, they're having a conversation and somebody's talking about having it. Oh, he's got it, man. He's got it. You know, and Hoffman kind of gets pissed. He's going, it. Everybody's always talking about it. What is it? And Olivier leans into him and goes, look at me. You know, because Olivier said he didn't have it anymore. I don't have it anymore. Yeah. You know, and there is that, you know, and I think that's shared from everybody from, oh, you know, wow. I'm trying to think of like a Miles Davis who might turn his back on the audience. And yet somehow or other, there's this charismatic kind of quality that he's got, which is, look at him, you know. Whereas David Lee Roth, there's no question. He's going, class clown, look at me, ah! You
know? Well, it's almost like that cool factor. I mean, you know, some people would call it the cool factor. And, you know, there are people that, like a guy like Prince. You know, Prince didn't have to ham for anybody. Prince could have, you know, Prince could do whatever he wanted to, and he could do no wrong because he was so damn talented. And but he had it. And there's these artists that just do have that, you know.
I know, but it, like, did you see the thing that was on Netflix, which is like Lionel Richie?
That was incredible. Incredible.
It really was. To be a fly on the wall with that many talented people all together. And then what you see that I found fascinating is Prince didn't even want to come.
I know.
No. Not my thing.
And the way they kind of positioned Sheila E. to get him in there, and she was disappointed, like, hey, I'm being used here, you know?
And you can see it on Paul Simon's face. Mm. You can see it on Bob Dylan. Dylan is scared shitless.
Yeah.
Like, and then finally, there's, you know, Stevie Wonder doing an impression of him, and that opens him up. And then Dylan goes, oh, okay. You just want me to be me. You
know? But it's great. But it also showed the vulnerability. Like, you know, at the end of the day, we're all, especially artists, we're all very insecure. And we just want, at the end of the day, we just want people to go, you did a good job. You know, like, good job. Good. We all just want a little pat on the back. And even Dylan felt uncomfortable. Imagine, everyone was probably uncomfortable because Dylan was there. So,
well, yes and no, right? Because here's the flip side of the coin to me that I see is, like, first of all, we're watching this thing because Lionel Richie's put it together. He's chased down the footage that's been sitting in the can, and he puts up some money, and then he's doing the talking head, you know, narrating the thing. And you go, Lionel Richie, man, he really understands show business. Like, he's a very show business kind of guy, right? Yeah. I'm doing the jazz hands because it's kind of so. And who else was like that? Well, Michael Jackson, he understood it. And Diana Ross is there. And man, she's totally into it. And you're realizing all of these people studied at the foot of Berry Gordy in the Motown thing. And Berry Gordy knew how to say, look, this is showbiz. This is how we do. You guys got to rehearse all day long and get those dance steps together because this is how we do it. And then they're very accustomed, they're comfortable with the idea of, hey, here's this power thing where all of these talented people are together. I'm completely secure in my talent. You know, I don't have any problem, you know, being here. This is fun for me.
Sure.
You know, so it was really, that was the other side of the coin. You're seeing the different types of talent that exist and then how it manifests itself in the personality and character that comes out of the, you know, their performances. Meanwhile, how about Huey Lewis? The guy killed it.
I was just going to, he was the one I was going to say. He was my favorite out of that whole story. It was my favorite because he's so humble, but he's just like, I mean, you could tell that guy was like, holy shit, what am I doing? And you know, him telling the story, like, I'm going to have to sing this part. And I also found it very interesting how Cyndi Lauper was, you know, Madonna could have switched out Cyndi Lauper easily. And when you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, Madonna probably would have been the one with a bit more lasting power, but Cyndi Lauper, you know, talented artist, talented singer. And yeah, I was one of the, but you know, you being somebody who's been around those kind of ensemble things, you know, playing big festivals, like, you know, of course the one festival that put you guys on the map back in 85, 86, you've been around those kind of egos before. And I don't know if it's a Canadian thing, but you know, usually we're pretty mild mannered. We're pretty like, hey, yeah, we'll go along. We'll do our thing. But as a Canadian artist who's worked in the US, it was almost like a superpower for us where we knew we were always kind, you know, respectful, but at the end of the day, we had our chops. You know, by the time we would go to the US, or most Canadian bands, by the time they would get to the US, they would be so honed by crossing Canada so many times that they would be able to, like, it's almost like sniper, you know, like, oh yeah, you're going to see, like, we're the nice Canadian guys, but we're going to destroy you on stage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it for me is I always did the Canadian thing. Obviously the roots were the singer songwriter tradition. So sure. You had your Gordy Lightfoots and Joni Mitchells and Neil Youngs and Leonard Cohens. And these people, there's a type of a kind of a humility built into that style of music, that kind of writing. Singer-songwriter, it's not about put on the show. You know, it's more about I'm going to put my heart right out there. And I'm just going to have an integrity that shows up in the music here. So that's the fundamental thing. Then here's this Canadian experience where we're all watching American television almost all the time. Mm. And then, oh, the bands that come here and tour and do really great, and they're getting played on Shroom FM. Well, they're all from England, right? You know, so we're getting all of this British invasion stuff, touring bands. I mean, you know, you're in Montreal. So, I mean, a band like Genesis they were huge when they had Peter Gabriel in it, never mind later when they were really starting to kill radio.
Yeah.
So that was huge in Canada. And so you're sitting here as a Canadian going, how do I compete with that? You right. know, how do I compete with all this American stuff and all of this, you know, European stuff it's so together. So then you get artists like Rush that realize, well, we're going to produce albums. They're going to be the same quality as Pink Floyd records, maybe even better. We're going to have ensemble playing that's going to be even as good as Led Zeppelin. You know, like, we're going to be a band where people gravitate to us because our musicianship is going to be really, really high. And that ensemble value of the making of a record, the way that it's going to sound, the image that it all projects, we're going to make sure we've got all of that shit absolutely together. So, you know, I think that kind of, I mean, I'm talking about Rush, but I could be talking about Bryan Adams. Right. I could be talking about Celine Dion. You know, there are artists that Shania Twain, they actually surpassed, you know, Rush on certain kinds of commercial levels, but in their own genres, they all had that Madonna spine of chromium steel, you know, that was like, this is what it takes, you know, this is what I'm going to be. And even if some record company guy that's got decades of success behind him is standing in front of me going, this is what I want you to do, we're going to say, no, thank you.
Yeah.
I know who I am. I know what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do, you know. And I think that's a Canadian thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. There's writers in Hollywood, Canadian writers, you know, a lot of them. I think that's part of it. They have a really solid understanding of, no, I know what's good.
Yeah.
I know what works, you know.
Yeah, and I know who I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me do my thing and I think it'll be fine. And eventually, you know, guys like Jimmy Kimmel, they want to hire Canadian writers, you know, So.
So you mentioned that you already have, you know, you have a book, you have another record in the can. What does the immediate future look like for you right now? I mean, I know that the Diamonds thing's been released already. Like, what's today looking like for you in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah. Well, as soon as I finish with you, I've got another interview.
Okay.
Yeah, one every half hour. Right. And this is my easy week. Last week was a little more dense. As I said, I've got this book, 10 Telecaster Tales. I wrote, where should I start? I designed a guitar.
Okay.
It was this guitar right here, and it's a Telecaster style guitar with Gibson kind of bridge and pickups and scale length and stuff. So, and I love this guitar like crazy. And I started writing pieces and I wrote 10 pieces. And then I went, okay, I'm going to write a book about the fact that I wrote and recorded these pieces. So it's going to be the largest volume of liner notes that was ever introduced into the world. I'd like that to come out. I think that's going to come out 2025, probably, and my guess is they're shooting for February. Maybe ECW Press is my publisher.
Okay.
Michael Holmes is my guy there. Shout out to Michael. And that I've also got a book of poetry. I had one that had come out 2021.
Yeah.
And I've got a second one called Leaning Into It. And I think I've talked them into putting that out. I mean, nobody makes any money putting out poetry books, but that'll come maybe later in 2025. Meanwhile, writing songs. I've got about 11 tunes in my book that are getting close. The lyrics are pretty much finished. And now it's a question of, banging the music up into shape and creating some kind of demos. And I did this compilation called Diamonds. I've got a project working with a label called Alma Records, run by a friend of mine named Peter Cardinale. And it's a bit more of a muso kind of a label. Their stuff is a little bit more musical, esoteric kind of based. And so from the three albums, Greg Campbell and this Diamonds project, he picked the harder rock stuff. So the stuff that's a little bit more esoteric, singer-songwriter-y. And then Peter's big on stuff like he mixes in Atmos now. So instead of stereo, you got this five, So some of the stuff might get remixed, but then it was like, well, Pete, why don't I just make some stuff right up from the bottom? Let's start from scratch and let's have some new stuff and record it that way, and it'll be even better. We use those as the bonus tracks,
Nice.
So he goes, okay, yeah, bonus tracks. Maybe that's a good idea. So Peter and I are still kicking it around, and Lord knows how long an album like that might take, and I don't care.
Right.
But so I wrote two tunes. Co-wrote them with a guy named Don Brightup. Shout out to Don. He'll never find that. Don is, he's got a band called Monkey House, and he does very Steely Danish kinds of stuff.
One of my favorite bands.
Me too. Yeah. So like, that's like, I can't wait to start working this stuff up. And these tunes that I have a very strong feeling that, 8 out of 11 are going to end up being very Steely Danish, because the two that I co-wrote with Don, they were kind of, that ballpark. And so, I realize there's going to be people out there and they'll go, what? What's Rick Emmett doing now? What? Steely Dan, what? But, I can't help myself.
Well, and I think that's always been the charm, is that, you do what feels right. And it's authentic, and it's what people expect from you. And it's nice. Honestly, it's really, really nice to talk to you and to hear that you're in that place, because I think I would have been disappointed if you weren't, because that's always been the vibe with you. You do your thing, nice nod to the past, but always forward motion. And, another artist like that, Robert Plant, he was never one of these guys that was going to sit back on the Zeppelin legacy. He was always going to, he's an explorer. He's always going to, and look at what he did with Alison Krauss. Like, all that stuff. It's just, that's to me what a true artist does. They never stop exploring. They never stop searching. So it seems like you're still doing that even at age 70, which is really, really nice to see, and gives me hope.
Well, thank you, man. That was nice to say. And wow, to be classed with Robert Plant, that's not too shabby. I'll take that. Thank you. Listen,
you're definitely up there in my opinion. But Rick, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm going to get in touch with Chip, because what we do, we're sponsored by Heartbeat Hot Sauce, which is a hot sauce company out of Thunder Bay, Ontario. So they make great hot sauce. So we're going to send you some out. I'll get your contact from Chip. We'll make sure we send you a nice box of hot sauce.
Nice. Hot sauce. Okay, great. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you so much, man.
All right. You're welcome.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, until I finally saw that documentary, I was just a fan of Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. But now I'm a fan of the band as well. I love musical documentaries. It's my favorite way of educating myself in anything. Sometimes I'll just fall into something and be like, I saw Walk the Line. I'm like, I want to know everything about Johnny Cash.
And of then course.
Four books later, you know, all the knowledge is still somewhat in there. Now I'm on a bit of a Triumph kick, and it's very interesting that they've always been around, and you hear the songs and you're like, wait a second, I know this song. I've heard it 5,000 times. Yep. I never put it together like, oh, this is the band Triumph. And that happens a lot.
And they put, you know, the thing about Triumph is that, like you mentioned, they're synonymous with rock and roll hits. Everybody knows them. Everybody knows at least one or two Triumph songs. Most people can hum them. They've been used in movies. They're just iconic, you know, they're iconic rock tracks. So, yeah, it's like having a veritable rock and roll legend, living legend with us. So, never take that lightly on this show. And we've had quite a few. So to have Rick is just another feather in the cap. So thank you to Rick Emmett for jumping on. Okay, Ryan, we've got a little bit of time and I want to give the floor to you. Tell us what happened.
Okay. So when I was a baby, my mom, while pushing me on a swing, she was changing my diaper and noticed, like, you know, and her eyes widened, not because of the mammoth gratuity of my bodily appendages, but more along the lines of I had a bunch of fluid in my balls and it scared the crap out of her. And then later in life, in like my late 20s, I realized that it had come back. And at first it was just kind of funny and I looked great in a bathing suit. It was kind of impressive. And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, do you want to get rid of it? I'm like, oh, you know, I don't want life to slow down. I'm playing in bands. I'm doing this, this, and this. And then in the last 2 years or 3 years, it's like, okay, now it's time. But then lockdown happened. And then, you know, in good old Canada, sometimes it takes a long time to get an appointment, then even longer to get the surgery sometimes. And then it was, we were all geared up and ready to go. And then they had to move it because people with more serious surgeries needed it. You know, if you have to get a tumor removed or something a little bit more important than Ryan with his fluid in his balls. So we eventually do it. And it's this same weekend that we have an event, you know, that we do for our work. And I had to skip it out. But, you know, the people that I work with are so great that it's not that my presence was like, we can do this without you. It's more along the lines of, we got you.
Exactly.
And you messaged me all weekend. It was very nice. So we get it. I get it done. And sure enough, it's funny. They're like 9 a.m. So the whole night before, I'm like, all right, I'm ready, coach. I'm ready. All right, go to sleep. We get there at 9 a.m. They're like, yeah, this isn't going to happen until 1:30. I'm like, but it's 9. And so that's a long time to wait. But it's amazing once you get in a hospital and you have to wait that many hours. It's amazing how when you don't see the sun, you don't notice time pass.
Oh no.
It's like being in, I'm imagining the people in purgatory, like they're like, oh, it's been thousands of years. Okay. So we get it done and I had two options. They're either completely go to sleep or we freeze you. And I'm like, the only thing I've ever heard about surgeries being particularly dangerous is when you go completely under. That's when there's like a little bit of a risk, especially if you're older. And even though I don't consider myself an old man, despite my constant, you know, claiming I am given my recent age bracket, I was like, you know, what's going to get me home to get the dog walked faster? Because Melissa was with us and we're in a French hospital and we really needed her. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm an English person speaking French. It's like, no, when it comes to surgeries and important things, it's good to have someone completely bilingual because
you need someone that can communicate for you, dude.
But the jargon in hospitals are all much more like, it's not your everyday passable French. This is super French time.
Yeah, no. Especially when it's something technical, you really, really need some explanation, you know? Definitely. 100%.
So it's happening. And my legs are bent and that's when they freeze. And I know people are scared of needles. I'm not. So they freeze my legs when they're bent, but because they froze like that, my brain associated, my legs are up like this. Even when they were back down,
I
still remembered being there, and this is uncomfortable. So the surgery happens, and I'm just paying attention to the sound of my heart, and it's like beep, beep, beep. And after a while, it's like it was like water torture. It's like, oh, God.
Were you awake the whole time?
Yeah. So it was about 40 minutes. The surgery was only like 40 minutes of 7 hours. There's no way I would have been awake. And there's no catheter need or anything. I've done all that, kids. If you ever want to go down along the lines of a much more interesting surgical story, I was kind of an anomaly when it came to a face breaking accident 22 years earlier.
Jesus.
Almost to the day 22 years earlier, by the way. So yeah, they wheel me out and they bring me into this recovery room and they're like, you know, they're like, okay, we're going to give you the pain stuff. We're going to see if you wake up. Or just how long it takes you to go into their room. And I'm like, I never realized I was addicted to my phone until I was there for like 2.5 hours, just kind of like looking around all twitchy. Yeah. And I'm like, and in my head, my legs are still bent up like this and I was uncomfortable, but I'm looking at my legs. I cannot feel my legs. I cannot feel anything. And I'm just staring. and I know my legs are low, but my brain is still screaming. Your legs are all the way up here. So that was a, that was an interesting part. And then they wheel me into the other room. And Melissa at this point had to go home to walk the dog because it had been hours and hours and hours. I remember like in a recovery part, eventually they're like, you know, I keep asking for pain stuff because it hurts, dude. Oh my God. Like when the pain started to happen and I want to be a tough guy, I'm like, no, no, no. Every time I'm tough 5 minutes later, it's like, no, you're not.
You're not.
So they're like, all right. You can go home, but we got to make sure you can walk first. Hmm. So I don't have feeling in there, but my legs know their legs and they can walk.
Right.
So I am walking around and I'm with these two nice nurses and they're like, okay, go in and sit down. And I'm like, I can't sit down. My balls are huge. I can't get what God's given to me above and under where it's supposed to go. So I'm like, I have to stand up. And they're like, okay, well, we don't want to watch you. I'm like, okay, well, you know, because that's the right thing for them to do is to not stand around staring at me. So Melissa comes in and I'm there and I still, like I said, have no feeling. And I'm relying on muscle reflex to get this done.
Muscle memory.
So I'm there and I'm like above the toilet. And I'm trying to make things happen. And all of a sudden, the world gets really slow and douchey. And it's starting to get dark. And I'm like, Mal, I got to go sit down. I'm going to faint. And I'm on an IV at this point, walking around. And it occurred to me that last night, the day before, I saw Kong, Godzilla and Kong, the New Empire, which I like way more than Godzilla versus Kong, by the way. And it occurred to me I hadn't eaten since maybe 7 o'clock the day before, and right now it is like 8:30, so I have not eaten in an entire day because it didn't occur to me, hey, you know, at midnight, be like a gremlin, eat the shit out of this right before midnight, like eat right before.
And
I didn't. So I'm about to pass out. I'm like, I need to eat now. And this amazing nurse went, and she I went to the nurse's station, got me all this orange juice and the sandwich. And like, you know, when you haven't eaten for a long time, everything you eat, you're like, you can be in the middle of the desert and you're at some shit greasy spoon and you're like, you know, that hot dog is the best hot dog you've ever had because you're starving. So this sandwich, I'm sure it was a good sandwich in its own right, but today it was super sandwich and I was just eating it so fast, like in a speed of, you know, when a dog doesn't know it's about to bite you, it's chewing so hard.
That's
what I am. And just like all of a sudden, this, my mom is trying to take the sandwich out of my mouth to give me the stuff to be like, you should probably put this in your nose now. I'm like, oh my woman, I'm trying to eat. Ryan need food. So,
you pretty much you hulked out on her.
Yes, I did. Well, you know, just for a second there, you know, as Hulk out as someone can do when they almost passed out while trying to pee out of their non-feeling penis. So,
Your poor mom too. Like, she's a saint.
Oh, my mom's a saint. And I am a Saint Laurent. You know, I'm a street that, you know, it gets pretty, get pretty sketchy at nighttime.
You've been peed on a few times.
Yeah, there you go. Kudos to my mom. Like, when I had to have jaw surgery and I had, you know, other health stuff happen when I was earlier, when I was younger, like she was always there, always had my back, and still 20 something years later, still was there. I'm sure she had better things to do with her day, but both her and Melissa are my heroes. They never left my side. And, it was a little bit of a rocky road to get back. Some days I felt like Rocky. Sometimes I felt like Rocky too. I'm like, oh, this time I'm going to beat Apollo. And then other days I felt like Rocky V. It's like, oh my God, this movie fucking sucks. And,
Well, listen, what matters is that you're better, and we got a lot of work to do, and we got a lot of great stuff coming up. And I want to encourage people, please, if you are enjoying the podcast and if you've been following us, we appreciate you. If you want to tell your friends about us, feel free to share the link to wherever you enjoy this. If you are watching us on YouTube, send the YouTube link out to people and let them know that you found these two guys that talk to cool people and have cool conversations. If you're streaming us, make sure you subscribe. Same thing on YouTube. Make sure you like, you're subscribing. Let us know in the comments who you'd like us to talk to, what you're enjoying, what you're not enjoying. And we appreciate all of you for supporting us. We really, really do. This means a hell of a lot. We've got a lot of great stuff coming up in the next few weeks, some heavy hitters, and we're closing in on our 100th episode, which we're in the midst of planning. So that'll be really, really fun. 100, Ryan. We've put up more than 100 pieces of content on our.
Oh, it's more like 120, 130 if you add up all the little mini ones. Little and things,
yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. To have that number 100 on an episode is huge. So we've got some plans for that. But we can't do this without you. So we appreciate it. And we also appreciate all of our friends over at Heartbeat Hot Sauce, the heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. Use our promo code Rockman20 and we'll get you 20% off your entire order. And check out the new Salsa Verde. It is a great, great sauce. And I think you'll really enjoy it. Thanks to our friends at Studio House Designs. Thank you to our friends at Audio Technica Canada for helping us sound so well and hear ourselves so well. We really appreciate you guys. Thanks to my co-host Ryan Stick, who is hopefully ball fluidless as the days go by. Thanks to our producer Julia Kajerski, who has absolutely nothing to do with your balls and everything to do with mine. That'll definitely get this episode taken down. And also thanks to all of you for joining us on this journey, and we'll see you next time on the Rockman Power Hour.